Good morning, all. I hope all of you can hear me. If you can't, please, if you can't, please signal, unmute your microphone, and then indicate that you can't hear me, and then I will work to try and fix the problem. I'm assuming that everyone can. So the first thing that I want to point out to all of you is that you've had a little bit of a week, a little bit more than a week to look at the videotapes and that are on Canvas, as well as the ones that are on the website, and as well as the materials that accompany the videotapes. So what I want to do today is to basically go over that material, especially so that you can see how to use this information in order to solve problems. Again, for those who came in, please, if you have a question, just you know, go to the chat box, which is down at the bottom where the controls are, and in the chat box, put a Q, which means that you have a question, and the chat box will normally tell me who has the question that I need to respond to. Let's see who else. There are a lot of people coming in at this time, which is fine. I just want to make sure that I have everybody that can be in the meeting is in fact admitted into the meeting. So please, if you have not muted your microphone, please do so. That way it makes it a little bit easier. And again, all you have to do if you wish to ask a question is to type into the chat box Q, and that will come up on my screen, and I will, at the first point that I can make the break, I will then respond to your question, or first of all, acknowledge who you are, and then you can ask your question. Okay? So let's first of all begin. Our job, and I'm going to share my screen right now. Just let me find. Okay. So our job is to determine how we are going to solve a differential equation, and that differential equation that we have to solve is basically the state variable equations that we found from the problem that we are solving. And if you remember, what we had to do was to solve an equation in the form y prime, or if y is the state variable, d by dt of the state variable is equal to the function okay. Let's see, this thing is telling me to do something. No, it's telling me. Okay. Please move this window away from the shared application. Okay. So my screen shares me. Okay, it's paused. All right. Hold on a second. All right. Everybody is in. So let's go back to the shared screen. Wrong screen. All right, so we have 30 people coming in. That's good. Let's go with the stop share for a minute. Admit. Let's do the stop share. Okay, we have 31 people. That's good. Okay, so that's what I want. Okay, let's go there. And let's do a screen share. And this is where I was before. Okay. Now this is basically where we're trying to find the solution of that equation. All right. And so when we integrate both sides of the equation, basically you're going to have the integral of the state variable is equal to the integral of the state variable equation, the right hand side of the state variable equation with respect to time. And this represents an area underneath the curve, an area like this. And the question is, how do we find this area, right? So if, in fact, the equation is not so simple to solve analytically, then basically we have to find the area underneath the curve numerically. So how do we do that? We break up the area underneath the curve in terms of strips, as you see here, where you can take each strip having the same time increment, delta t, so that from some given starting point, t0, t1 will be t0 plus delta t, then t2 would be t1 plus delta t, t3 would be t2 plus delta t, etc. And finding the area underneath the curve is, in the simplest form, finding some way of representing this area. And the simplest way, which is the first method, which was Euler's way, assumes that this function over here in this interval is considered to be a constant. And in each interval, it's considered to be a constant. What's the constant? It's basically the value of the left-hand side of the strip. Okay, so wherever this line intersects the curve, it is represented by the as being the value at the left-hand side of the strip. Now let me move this down a little bit. Okay. Now, because of the fact that we assume the value of the function to be a constant, the value on the right-hand side, normally I have to give you two things. Number one, the initial value of t, and number two, what the value of the state variable is at that initial value. So I have to give you t0 and y0. Now, since that quantity is in fact a constant, because once you plug it into the right hand side of the equation, it becomes a constant value. I can pull it out of the integral, and then I have the integral of dt, which is the integral of dt would be t evaluate from the upper limit to the lower limit. Okay, and so the very simple form for Euler's method says that I can find the value of y at the next or the state variable at the next value of t as being the value at the previous value of t, which you already know, plus this function, which you already know, multiplied by this step size. Now, once you do that, the next thing that you have to do is from this equation over here, you now know that t1 is equal to t0 plus delta t. And so now you know t1 and y1 at this location right here, okay? So therefore you can determine f at t1 and y1. And so you can repeat this process once again. And you keep on doing that. And you can write an algorithm for that. Now this document appears on the Let's see, I just want to make sure that everybody's been admitted. Okay, so everybody's been admitted. Okay, good. So this document appears on the Canvas site. So basically what you have here is given the initial values and the function, because you write this as dy by dt is equal to a function of the independent variable, namely time, and the state variable, and the step size. This is chosen by you, okay? Now, how do we choose this? We'll talk about that in a second. So as you can see from here, this is the code. This is the Euler method that computes the next value of y, that computes the next value of t, and then, of course, you can either print it or you can save it. If you save it, of course, you can then use it to plot. If not, you just print it out so that you have the values. Now, how good is this method? And this is the important part, that y at t1, okay, if you remember y at t1, T1 is equal to T0 plus delta T, okay? And so you can use a Taylor series expansion for that around T0, and this is the expression that you're going to get. Now, since dy by dt is equal to f, and you have to evaluate dy by dt at t equals to T0, we can see that the first two terms of the Taylor series expansion matches exactly the expression for the Euler method. What doesn't match is these are the extra terms of the Taylor series, okay? And because of that, since it's missing all these terms, the error is based upon the largest contributor to the error. And if delta t is small, then delta t squared is even smaller, delta t cubed is even smaller, etc. And so therefore, this term right here would represent the leading term of the error. And we can write that in a form of a constant times the step size squared. Okay, that constant depends upon whatever the second derivative is, and that depends upon what the form of the equation f looks like. Okay, so for the Euler method, this is the local error. Now, when you do this, this is what is also called the per step error. So every step, there will be an error of this type. Now, you can say that the overall, so what happens if you're applying this many, many steps? So for example, let's say I'm starting at T0, I'm going to T1, I'm going to T2, I'm going to T3, T4, etc., until I reach Tn, because I'm doing this many, many times, okay, then the error will accumulate because you have a term like this for each step. The error accumulates to such an extent that we call the application of this methodology many, many times to have what is called a global error. The global error will always be one power less than the local error. And the coefficient over here will be some number, which in general will be different from this value right here. Now, you might think that this is great. It's a very simple method. As you can see, here is the code, okay? But when you look at the error, the global error, because you won't do this just for one step, you'll be doing this for many steps. And so therefore, what will happen is the error will accumulate, and that's the reason why it's not such a great technique. So the only way you can keep control of the error is to take very, very small step sizes. Now, another method, which I, if I remember correctly, we did talk about, was the modified Euler method. And his idea there was, okay, there's got to be a better way to represent the area underneath the graph. And so why don't I draw a straight line between this point and that point? And because of that case, of that situation, you need to know the value of T0 at this value, at this point here. You need to know Y0 at that value. Those are normally given to you when you start out. But then you also need to determine T1 at the end of the time step and Y1. But Y1 depends upon T1. The problem is that Y1 is what you're trying to figure out. Okay? And so therefore, what Euler said was, okay, I know how to get Y1 using the Euler method, okay, which is this step right here. It says, why don't I use that as a predicted value of Y1, okay? And then I will use that instead of the actual value of Y1 here. Okay, and then I will use to find the area of this underneath in this area right here, which is a trapezoid. Let me use the trapezoidal rule. The trapezoidal rule basically says use the value of the base over here plus the base over here, multiplied it by the height of the trapezoid divided by 2. That will be the area of this trapezoid. And here is that expression. Okay, so this is one base, that's the value here. This is the other base, that's the value over here, multiplied by the step size, which is that, divided by 2. And so this would then be the value at T1. Okay, so think of Y1 tilde as being the predicted value of Y1, and this basically corrects it to come up with a better result. Okay, and remember what Y1 tilde is, it's the Euler's method, and this is what the time is at T1, just like it was before. So the code is very, very simple. Okay, now what I want you to remember is in the Euler method, I did one functional evaluation, which we call a floating point operation or a flop, okay? When we come to do the modified Euler method, you're gonna have to do two of them, okay? One is here, which is exactly the same one as that, and this is the second evaluation. So given T0 and Y0, the initial values, and the function and delta t, whatever the step size, you do this for however many steps that you need. This right here is the calculation of the predicted step. This is what I called y tilde in this picture. Okay, and here it is. All right, and then I update the time, and then I use y. Does someone have a question? Okay, then I update the time and use the value of y in here, and I come up with an updated value of the state variable. Okay, and again I print it. And what I do now, which I haven't written over here, is that if I'm doing this in a do loop, all right, then what happens now is Ti and Yi now become the like the T0 and Y0 when you started out the process, and you go and do this however many times until you come to the end. Now, what is the local error? Just like we calculated over here, and you can show this the local error for the modified Euler turns out to be some constant times delta t cubed. So it appears to be better than the previous case. The global error, if you remember, this is after doing it many, many steps, will always be some constant times delta t squared. Okay, that constant times delta t squared is better than the error for the regular Euler's method. Okay, which means that if you were to compare the two, and normally what people will do is they will want to compare the global error of one to the global error of another method. And the reason is, you know, what is the advantage? Because here you're doing two floating point operations, and those two floating point operations themselves, you know, if you're going and doing these calculations through some company that is allowing you, for example, ANSYS or MATLAB or LabVIEW or whatever it is, or Mathematica, those will cost you some money, all right? And so what's the advantage for a system that has two floating point operations versus one? And we will show you in an example, or we'll discuss in an example, where this, what the advantages are. Now, the question that you might have, is, okay, what happens if I have two state variable equations? Okay, so let's say I have dy dt is equal to f of t, y, and z, where y and z are the two state variables, and dz dt is another function of t, y, and z. And suppose that I give you at time t equals to t zero, what the initial value of this first state variable is, y zero, and what the initial value of the second state variable. So how do I use that in order to solve the problem? So we do it, so here is a basically what you do for the regular Euler's method, okay? Does anybody have any questions? Okay. So as you can see from here, this is nothing more than an extension of what we did when you only have one state variable. But you also have to do this for the second state variable. Okay, so y1 is equal to y0 plus f times delta t. Z1, the second state variable, is equal to its initial value plus g delta t, and then you update t1, and then you use this numerical or this algorithm that I gave you before. What happens if you have three state variable equations, for example, like this, where now you have h of t, y, z, and x, okay? So again, what I would have to do is I would have to know the initial value of the fourth state variable at time t equals to t zero, okay? The only thing that you would have to do is to include the third state variable equation in here. And in these, you'd have to add x zero here and x zero there as well. So here is the example of the just the Euler method for two state variables. So if you're given t0, y0, z0, the function f, the function g, and delta t, so you start this do loop, and here is the y equation, here is the z equation, here is the update in time. Once you have, you do these calculations. So now for each state variable, you're doing one floating point operation. Okay. And then this thing continues. So what do we mean by these? So for example, suppose that f of t, y, and z is e to the t plus sine y plus 2z. Okay, what does this f of t I minus 1, yi minus 1, zi minus 1 is? So here, as you can see, wherever there's a t, I replace it by ti minus 1, like that. Wherever you see a y, I replace it by yi minus 1, like that. And wherever you see a z, you replace it by zi minus 1. And for the g equation, again, these are two, you know, I picked them out of the air just to show you how to apply them. This is your g of ti, yi, and zi. So again, ti minus 1 squared plus 4yi minus 1 times zi minus 1. That's basically what this means. Okay? And if you have an x equation, again, I would have to tell you what the expression is for h in here in order to be able to do that calculation. All right? So if you have, okay, if you have any questions, all right, chat. Okay, so Carlos asked the question, how do you calculate the errors constant? You normally don't, okay? The only way you would know that is if you knew, for example, because the error, the constant of the error is basically a summation, if you're doing it for one step, it's for the Euler method, it's just the second derivative of the function f with respect to time. So, sorry, dy dt is equal to f. So d squared y by dt squared is the derivative of f with respect to time, okay? And that's, and I'll show you that in a little bit, but in general, we normally don't assume that. In fact, the only thing that we do assume is that for the sake of argument, that the values of C or D for the two different situations, we normally assume them to be the same value, whatever that value is, so that we can get some kind of a relationship between the time steps of one method versus the time step of another method. Okay? That's the response to Carlos, who asked that question. Okay? So just give me a chance and we'll show you a little bit more on this. Okay? So what about if you decide to use the modified Euler for two-state variables? So again, we start out with the same things. We start out with t0, the initial values y0 and z0 for the two-state variables, the two functions, and the step size. And as you can see, what we do is, first of all, we calculate the predicted values of the two-state variables. Okay, first, because you need these values in order to do the calculation in F and also in G. Then you update the time, as you see here. And then you do what amounts to as the corrected value of the state variables. Okay? What happens if I have three state variables? So again, as I said to you before, what you do is you add the third state variable to the list that appears here and here. You add the function, for example, h for the third state variable. You add the third state variable, the predicted value of the third state variable. And this should read xip and xi in here, and then down here, you put in the corrected value. okay, where it would be xi is equal to xi minus one, and then the h, whatever the function is for the third state variable, these arguments that you see here are the arguments that would go in here, or actually these arguments that you see there would go in here. And then in this argument, in this situation over here, you would have ti, okay, yip, zip, and xip. Okay, so you can always have, if you need to, you can add as many state variable equations as you can have, as you need, all right? Why do I do it for two? Because from a standpoint of an examination, that's about the highest you can go and get anything out of seeing whether you understand the methodology. Okay, so now let me go and show you an example, okay? Okay, so let's say here I'm interested in showing you the Euler method for two state variable equations. So we're looking at this document right here, which you have something similar to that at let's see, is it here? No, it's another document. Okay. Let's do this one instead first. Just this is for one state variable equation, all right, that we are trying to solve. The first case is the Euler method, the second case is the modified Euler. Okay. So let's assume that this is the function that was given to you. And let's assume that you're told y is equal to 1 at time t equal to 0. Okay, so to calculate f of t0, y0, you plug in y0 equals to 1 in here and t0 equals to 0 in here. And so you get this particular value. You do the calculation of using Euler's equation. Y0, we said, was equal to 1. This function turned out to be 0 times a step size of 0.1. Here, the step size would have to be given to you, okay? Or you choose it yourself. So you do this calculation, and Y1 turns out to be 1. You then do the calculation for T1. T1 is equal to T0 plus delta t, so t0 is 0, delta t was 0.1, so you get that. The next thing that you have to do is, knowing y1 and t1, you calculate f of t1 and y1. So again, you go back to this equation up here, 5y squared t plus 3t, and wherever the y is, you put in y1, wherever you see the t, you plug in t1, and you get this calculation, okay? 5 times 1 squared is 5, times 0.1 is 0.5, plus 3 times 0.1 is 0.3, so that gives you 0.8. And then you calculate y2 using the same formulation. Okay, why is the screen share paused? Okay. All right, so let me stop this and let me start it again. Okay. So you do the calculation to find the value of y2, calculation of t2. These are now the initial values that you need in order to calculate y3. How? You calculate f of t2 y2 in the same manner, 5 y squared times t plus 3 times t, okay? And so here's the value for y, which is 108. Here's the value of t, which is 0.2. That gives you f, And then you plug it into here to determine the value for Y3 and for T3. Okay, so let me see if there's anybody who has a question in the chat. Okay. All right. Okay. Let's see. Okay. All right. Okay. All right. All right. So if anybody has a question, please unmute your microphone and ask the question. Okay, so if not, let me continue. Here is the application of the modified Euler. Same equation, same initial conditions. Okay, so again, we know what f of t zero y zero is. Okay, we calculate the predicted value using the Euler method. We calculated the time, and then we calculate f of t1 y1, the predicted value, because we're going to need that in this term right here. So when you plug in five times y1 tilde, which is this value here, times t1, which is this value here, plus three times t1, you get 0.8, and then to get the corrected value, it's y0 plus f of t0 y0, which is this value that we had before, plus f of t1 y1 tilde, which is this value that we just calculated. The step size was 0.1, okay? And when you plug in that value, here is y1. Now, compare the result that we got here to the results that we got here using the Euler method. So they're different. They're different. Now, let's go on to the next step. Now, these two values, the ones I have underlined over here, those are the two values that you use for the next step. Okay, Alfonso has come in. All right, so let's see. Christopher, the writing is not legible. Okay, let's see what I can do. Okay. Is the writing legible now? Say again. Okay. Are you saying that the writing is not legible?
Professor, that question was from before.
Ah, okay.
Now we can all see it perfectly.
Okay. All right. So let's go to the next step. All right. So given the value of 1.04 and the value of T1 that we just got of 0.1, we then calculate F of T1 Y1 using the same methodology. Calculate the predicted value using the regular Euler's method. So Y1 is 1.04 from before. The F plus F, which is what we just got here, times the time step, which is 0.1, that gives you the new value, the predicted value for Y2. Okay. And then you calculate T2. And then you calculate F of T2 and Y2, again, using the same methodologies that we talked about before. Let's see. Okay. And then lastly, yes, okay, so no we can read. Okay. Again, all right. Fantastic. So the last step is to calculate Y2. And again, you follow exactly the same step. Y1 plus the value for F that you got, that you had used for the regular Euler method here. That's this value here. And then the value of F that you got using the predicted values, which is this term right here, times delta T over 2, and here is the value that you have. Now, again, let's take a look at the values that you got in this case, and let me, this thing is always in the way. Okay, so here is the value at point 2, 1.08, using the Euler method, and here's the value of 0.2 using the modified Euler method. Okay, and now we have about a few more minutes, so let me show you how do you handle the Euler method for two state variable equations. Okay, does everybody see the Excel sheet? Oops, let me go back because it appears I have to unpause this. Okay, so here it is. Okay, so let me go back and share this. Okay, so let's take a look at this example right here. Here are your two differential equations, where O stands for omega, like the angular velocity of your problem, okay? This right-hand side right here is what I will call F, which is basically omega squared plus 2 times V, which is the second state variable, plus 2 times D, where D is your input or your source, which only depends upon time. It might depend upon other things as well, but here I'm just using it with respect to time. And here is the second state variable equation, where V, let's say, might be the velocity of a mass, which is just omega minus 2 times V. So because I'm doing omega and V, that might come from a problem that involves the two, might involve a transducer of some kind. Okay? So here I'm giving you the step size of 0.2. Here I'm giving you the initial values that at time t equals 0, omega is 3, and the initial velocity is 0. And so with this information, what we want to do is we want to use the Euler method to solve the problem. So here I'm calculating the source at the initial time. So you see, if you see up here in the box, it tells you which value of t I'm using, A19. So if I highlight it, I'm using that value, the initial value. Now, once I have that, I can then calculate F. F, if you take a look, all right, based on here, it requires you to take the initial value of O squared plus twice the V term plus twice the initial input. Okay, and it gives you what that value is right here. Then I calculate G, okay? I always do my calculations for these functions first, but you can, and the reason why is because these terms right here depend upon the values of the correct values of the state variables. So here I'm calculating the g function. G function is basically, as written up here, is O minus 2 times V. Okay, so here is that calculation. The increment in time, all right, and here let me see if I can okay, so if you remember, the increment in time is this really wasn't the value, the thing that I wanted. Okay, so I think it was this one. Nope, wrong one. All right. This is the one. So here, what I've done, okay, so this is the Euler method for two-state variables. I've done these two calculations here. And remember, y is omega and z is the velocity. And the time is the updated time. So the updated time is this thing right here. And then the next calculation over here is basically the calculation of the updated value of O or omega and the updated value of V. So here, as you can see, this is nothing more than the previous value. Okay, so this is Y0, if you want to call it that, plus F times the delta t, which was 0.2. That was doing this calculation here. Okay. And then up here, this is the calculation for the second state variable, which is the Z0, if you want to call it that, plus G times delta T, okay? Here's the G times delta T. That's doing the second step right here. Now, how do I do this do loop? Very simply, now that I know these two values, I take this and I copy it here, as you can see. Okay. I take this point, this value, and I copy it here, as you can see. And the time t2, as you can see from here, is basically the updated value of t. Now with these three values, all I need to do as far as this Excel sheet is concerned, all I have to do is basically do that, and I can drag it down for however many steps that I want. And once I do that, that will fill these results here. But then to be correct, what I have to do is I have to take these two values because they depend upon whatever values that I have in these columns, and I have to drag them down. And of course, everything will get changed to get the correct values. And that's basically what you need to do as far as the the Euler method. Now, I also have here the modified Euler method. Here I've taken two different equations with a step size which is different, with initial values which are different, and I follow exactly the same step. Here is the source, the D, and notice that here, because it depends upon time, I use the value of time that appears in here. Okay. The F values, as you can see from here, the F is omega squared minus 3V plus 2D. Okay, so here's the omega squared minus 3V plus 2D. Okay, and then for the G, this is omega minus V squared. So here is, it's minus omega minus V squared. There's a minus sign here, and that's also the same kind of thing, okay? So having done that, here I'm, the next thing that I do, this, which is what I call the predicted value and the corrected value, those are the predicted values and corrected values based upon the initial values that I have over here. This is carrying out the results based on Euler's method. This is what I called Y tilde. Okay, and let's see if I can go back over here. Okay, it was Y tilde or YIP and ZIP. So those two columns that I was talking about actually do this calculation here. These two terms. So here they are. Here is one. Okay, and here is the other. And in reality, if I wanted to be correct, I would calculate, put these two first, and then put the Ti plus delta T term next, because that updates the value of Ti. This then updates the value of the source based upon the updated time. Okay, and then these two things right here, this one and that one, these calculate the F's and the G's based upon the predicted value of the first and second state variable and time. So these two steps here and here are the equivalent of doing this part, this and this. Okay, and then let's go back. And then finally, this is where everything is put together. So here, notice what happens is I take okay, so this should be a BI. Okay. BI, that's correct. And let me drag this down so you can see that. Okay, this changes things. Over here, I just want to make sure that this is correct. Okay, so this depends upon the initial value plus the step size over 2 times the value of F, the first F and the second F, to give me what amounts to as the corrected value of the first state variable. And this is, again, the initial value of the second state variable plus the step size over 2 times the two values of functions, the G and the G here, to give me this calculation. So this value that I'm having over here that I show you, or I'm marking, that's the calculation of this term right here. Okay, and this term over here, which looked like that, okay, is actually the second, this thing that we did up here. And again, just as we did before, notice that these two values here are exactly the same two values here. Ti plus delta t, which is t1, that goes there. And so now with these three new values, or this is the value at, this is t1, this is omega 1, this is v1. With these values, you then proceed in the same way to get all the other calculations. And then these two results over here and this value at t, that represents t2. And as you can see, here is the t2. Here are these two values over here are these values there. And what you get at the very end are the values of the state variables at, in this case, it would be t3, okay? So if I ask you to give me the information up to t2, all right, then all you need to do is to give me this information here, which means you don't have to do these calculations to get these results. If I ask you for t3, then for sure you would need to do this. All right, so now what we are at 55. What I was mentioning to you before, and I will discuss the next time, what we will do is we'll talk about Rangakata. So please look at those videotapes that we had regarding Rangakata, okay? And we'll talk about them on Wednesday. On Wednesday, again, I will send, not Wednesday, but on Tuesday, I will send you out a video, a link to the Zoom class. The Zoom class will discuss Rangakata in full detail so that you can see how the results have been obtained. And we'll see the reasons why Rangakata came into being. And the reason is very simple. If we go back and we take a look at this picture that you see over here, notice the progression. We've assumed, first of all, the function to be assumed the constant in the strip. Then we assume that it was a straight line. So the next level would assume that the that I replaced the curve by a quadratic. Okay? Quadratic would require you, because quadratic is in the form of a plus b x plus cx squared, requires 3 points, which means I would have to give you information here, here, and here. And so that's very difficult to do. So Rangakata came along, or Ranga and Kata working either together or separately, came along and came up with new equations that are going to be used. Okay, so what we will do next time, okay, what we will do next time is we'll do Rangakata, that way you can see what's what. And because it's 2 hours, we will also discuss, for example, this two cases, one Rangakata second order, and something Rangakata second order midpoint. And we'll see the differences between the two. And we will talk about other Rangakata methods that you've already discussed, like the fourth order Rangakata and Rangakata-Felberg, if we have the time. And with that, that will be sort of the end of the of this topic of numerical methods. Now, your examination next Monday will ask you to do these kind of calculations that I've shown you here. So if you have, I will upload this particular Excel sheet, so that you will have it available, so that you can actually look at it and see if you can understand it or see what exactly I did in order to get these calculations. And at the same time, the kinds of things that you see over here, whether it's Rangakata, whether it's Euler, whether it's modified Euler, whether it's Rangakata second order or Rangakata second order midpoint, those are the kinds of things that you're going to see on your examination. Okay, so I'm going to stop the share here and let's see who else had any questions. Are you going to share your website in this Excel sheet? I already answered that question. Okay, are there any other questions that anybody wishes to ask? Okay, I know that we have like 37 people, including myself, in, but again, if you have any questions, if you feel something does not sit well with you, this actual lecture goes until about, I don't close it off until about 1:10 or something like that. So if you can stay, you can ask the questions and I can answer you over time until this lecture ends. Or you can bring the questions to the office hours on Wednesday, which will normally run after my other class. So the office hours on Wednesday will be between like three 15 or 3 o'clock to 4 o'clock, and I'll answer them there. Okay, so once this recording is finished, I will see how to add this recording as well, both to the to the website, and I will also try and get this Excel sheet uploaded so that you guys can have access to it. Okay. All right. So as far as I'm concerned, everything is done. We'll see you guys on Wednesday. See all of you on Wednesday, guys, gals, all the students on Wednesday. If you have any questions, you can stay back and we'll discuss. Okay, thank you very much.
Dr. Levy, when can we get our exam grades back?
I'm hoping to get them back to you Wednesday.
Thank you.
Okay, other questions?
I have a question. Based on the example that you did today, how many times should we repeat this process?
It all depends. It depends on the problem. If you're doing something for your own work, you know, you might need to do this many, many steps. Like, you know, you might have to run it for 10 minutes. So if you're doing a step size of 0.1, okay. So if you're doing 10 minutes, that's 600 seconds, or 0.1 seconds per step, you're doing 6,000 steps. So if you're doing, depending upon what goes on, you know, you might have to run things for hours. You know, it depends upon the problem that you run into for your company. As far as the examination is concerned, you might be asked to do this, you know, 3-4 time steps, something like that. So, just don't focus so much on how many time steps, focus on the methodology and understanding the methodology to solve the problem.
Okay, thank you.
Mm-hmm. Anybody else? Carlos, are you still there? Carlos, if you are still there. All right. So next class, we'll be talking about Rangakata method, and we will be discussing that in more detail. Okay? All right. Stay safe, all of you. And we will see you on Wednesday. Hello? Okay.